You know, it wasn't until the 19th century when books became readily available, especially for the low income. I grew up with books. I loved to read. In fact, I would find corners where mom and dad couldn't find me because I wanted to read. And they always had one more chore for me to do. But for thousands of years, we told our stories around campfires, in the halls of kings and queens, and in the mud huts in the heart of Africa. There's something about a story that's told, and there's something sacred about a story that's heard. In these conversations, I'm just trying to provide a time and space to hear the stories of people around me. I knew each person before we sat down to speak and to listen, but I always came away from each conversation with a deeper appreciation and a deeper admiration for a person I already appreciated and admired. I hope you enjoy these conversations, and I hope you feel inspired to provide a space and time to hear the stories of others. Welcome to these unfiltered conversations. Well, good afternoon. I'm here with Eyab and Milat.
Milat. Yes.
Okay. You can tell that I'm not really good with those names, so, and I won't even try with your last name. So, I'm not sure when we first got to know each other. I was trying to remember. You know, I try to rewind my memory, and I'm not sure how far back it goes. I don't know if you have any idea or not.
I knew you from way back when I was in Goshen College.
Okay.
You used to do 808.
Yep, yeah.
Zion Chapel.
Yep.
808. So I used to come.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that was where I would have first seen you. Now, were you together then?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so this is actually the first time interviewing a husband and wife, and so this is going to be fun. In a different sort of way.
Yeah.
So you attended there back in the day, and you did not, probably.
No, I lived in Fort Wayne.
Oh, Fort Wayne, okay. Yeah. So what year did you graduate from Goshen College then?
That would be May 2003.
2003?
So we're talking 21 years ago.
21 years ago. That starts to date us. It means that we're a lot older than we were back then, right?
Yeah, so I had no gray hair.
Yeah, well,
look at me now.
I still have hair, right? Okay, so I'm just going to ask you to tell your story. We're just having a conversation here. And tell me about where you came from, childhood, and eventually we'll get to how you met and go from there. So whichever one of you jumps in, we'll let you do whatever you would do.
I was born in Ethiopia.
Okay.
And I moved here to Fort Wayne. Well, not here, but Fort Wayne in 1989.
Okay.
I was 15 years old.
Okay.
And I had family there, mm-hmm. So I stayed with them, cousins, aunts, uncles. So.
And so at 15 you came over. Tell me about your life in Ethiopia before you came over here.
Well, I lived with my parents, went to school. I mean, just regular life, nothing very exciting. I mean, I was very young, so just, you know, back home, parents are very protective, so we didn't have the freedom of doing this and doing that like they do now. We didn't drive when we were 16, you know, or learned how to drive when we were 15. So it was just school, home, friends, school, home, friends, nothing very exciting. The family life. Yeah.
So how many in your family?
There's five of us.
Five siblings?
No, five. Two siblings and my parents.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's three children and two parents.
Yes.
And did you grow up, what part of Ethiopia?
I grew up in the capital city, Addis Ababa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
That's very good.
And tell me about the city. What do you remember about the city growing up?
It was nice, the weather. The weather was just awesome. It was not very cold, it was not very hot. There was rainy season, and when rainy season ends, all the flowers will just come out like wildflowers. And just, it was nice. It was cool. Now it's very busy. When you go back to visit, it's hectic, it's crazy. There were cars, they all followed their lanes, and you know. So it was just slow-paced and nice, and I enjoyed it.
It was.
Which means it is not now.
No, it's not slow paced at all. I mean, it's fast paced, crazy. People, when they drive, they drive. You don't see a lot of accidents, but they drive crazy.
What were some of your favorite childhood memories?
Hanging out with my parents because they worked when they came home. As a family, we hanged out. My aunts and uncles would come. They were younger, and they would show us different forms of dances, like, you know, from the U.S., Michael Jackson. And just hanging out with my friends, going out with friends, you know, just going to their houses, playing, because I was too young at that time, and just hanging out with family and spending the winter, our winter, which is rainy season, we call it winter, at my grandma's house for 3 months. Or just it's in the same city. Mm-hmm. I would just go there, and my aunt and uncle were young, you know, themselves. So
when you say you played, what did you play? Other than the Michael Jackson dance?
We played something called Pepsi. So what you do is you have a bowl. Like, it's like dodgeball, but smaller. Mm. And they have, you know, the lids of Coca-Cola bottles. Mm-hmm. We call it corky.
Okay.
So you have to have six of them piled up nice and neat before you get hit. So we would divide, like, into equal groups. And then the person would hit the corky, like, pile up coins, like, stacked up coins, hit the corky. When it falls, we all run away, and the group that hit it, is it the group that hit it or the opposite? We grab the ball and try to hit the opposite team. If you're hit, you're out.
Okay.
But in the meantime, the goal is to make sure you are able to stack all the six back to where they were. So if all of them are hit, and the other team won't
win. I played it, but I don't remember.
Usually it's the girls that played it. Okay. I don't know, curry, where you could, you know, where you would draw little squares and chalk, we call it curry, and we throw the stone and just hops and kick the...
Yeah, we would call it hopscotch, maybe?
Yeah, something like that, similar to that, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm playing those, and Susie, or it's like, we tear up stockings, or what do you call it, pantyhose, and we tie them up because they are so white and stringy, and we make and one person will stand on the side, but the other person will stand on the other side, and will try to jump it, and each time they'll raise it up.
Okay. I don't know. Jumping rock? Or
no. It's called Susie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think kids all around the world will find something to play with they have. And you'll invent the game if you have to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you know, Hot Wheels and stuff?
Yeah.
What you have here, or what we have here? We actually used to make Hot Wheels in any shape or size using wires.
Yeah.
And you would have like a truck. You can make a truck
with wires.
Strong wires.
Yeah.
And fun. A lot of fun. And then decorate it the way you want to.
Yeah. So you were free to make that look any way you wanted.
Anything. Yep.
Well, how about you? Tell me a little bit about your background, childhood, your time in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
So you were born there as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was born in Addis Ababa,
the capital city as well.
The same area, sir?
Same city.
Did you know each other?
No.
Okay.
No. We got to know each other here.
Okay.
In Goshen. Mm-hmm. Well, I came to Goshen, and then she was at Fort Wayne. We used to have a Bible study thing going on, like a small group. So that's how we got to know each other.
Okay. Yeah.
But back when I was in Ethiopia, let's see. My childhood is a little different from hers because my parents decided to send me to a boarding school. So from grade like 7, from when I was like 11 years old to like up till I graduated high school, I was in a boarding school.
Okay.
Of course, I visit, you know, family, family come to visit me. Reason is because that boarding school was one of the top schools, and my dad was a believer.
Okay.
Of, you know, good education. Mm-hmm. So he put all of us, because of one child, one of my siblings, which were 5 of us, by the way, kids. Mm-hmm. So we went there. So a lot of my childhood was kind of like sheltered. in a boarding school where it's a Christian school as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I was raised, and then went to college after that in Ethiopia. And I didn't even finish that. I was studying to be a civil engineer.
Okay.
Didn't finish that. At some point, my parents decided that they want to send their kids to the U.S. for mm-hmm. good education. And then they worked out. So I happened to go to Heston College in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been 24 years ago.
Okay. So I didn't ask you, yet there were three siblings. Mm-hmm. Where were you in? Were you the oldest?
I'm the oldest,
okay.
Yeah.
And
we both are.
They're both. And you had how many siblings in your family?
Five.
Yeah, okay. So you're both the oldest.
Yep.
So do you guys
fight?
Because you're both
yeah. We do.
Well, that might be another conversation,
yeah.
But maybe not this one. Okay.
Yep.
So what about your childhood memories? What are some things that kind of stick out to you?
Soccer. You know, as you would know, soccer is a big deal.
Yeah. But it would be football, right?
Football. Yeah, exactly. It's the soccer, football conversation there.
Sure.
But yeah. So soccer would be the main sport in Ethiopia, and you know our life is totally immersed on education.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of focus on that, and then hangout would be playing soccer.
Okay.
You know, so you play a lot of soccer. Boys play a lot of soccer, and then we do track, running and stuff like that. And for fun, I was not that kind of guy who would go to coffee shop or go to a cake place where you know they serve cakes and stuff. I wasn't a cafe kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like you know find your friends, and it would probably be in a church setting or school and hang out with them. And there isn't a lot of sleepovers, you know, like people do.
Yeah.
So like short amount of time, you spend time with friends and. A lot of my life would have been around church. So you hang out with your friends at church and go home and then eat. That kind of stuff.
So school, church, and soccer.
Yeah, you can summarize it just like that.
Then there was like 3% other than that, but not
probably,
much. Okay.
Yep, I would agree.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame that you didn't grow up with coffee because Ethiopia is the mother of coffee.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, mom and dad who are at home when family come or friends come to visit. They do. Have you seen
the whole ceremony?
Yeah.
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 They do a lot of that. They do that not occasionally. It's like a regular thing.
Uh-huh.
People come.
Yeah.
The city is right there. You know, with the incense burning mm-hmm. and.
Do you do any of that
at home here?
Yeah,
we don't do that at home, but we have groups like Ethiopian
friends.
Okay,
they do that a lot.
Yeah,
now they do that a lot. I mean, we've had a lot of Ethiopian friends around the area,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't had people actually doing the ceremony
until
the last 2 years.
People had a date, but it wasn't every day.
Yeah.
Like this time, when we always gather, somebody's making coffee with the whole ceremony.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With the incense going on and all that good stuff.
Mm.
We
should do an Ethiopian coffee ceremony party here.
Yes. That would be
great. It just goes along perfectly.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
The brew and
yep.
you know, the especially the some yeah.
After the conversation, we'll have to work on that one.
Yeah.
So you were in what? Did you start? Did you do all your school at the boarding school? Was that your whole school? Your whole education was at the boarding school?
Half of it.
Okay.
So from like grade, until grade six, I went to, a public school?
Okay.
And then after that, it would be boarding school,
mm-hmm.
a private school.
So comparing those two, now you had the public school?
I went to an Indian national school for the first 8 years.
Okay.
And then 1.5 year of public school. The Ethiopian public school, and then I came here. So I went to Northrop High School for
me. Okay.
Yeah.
An Indian school?
It's Indian National. It's private that you have, opened by Indians, I guess.
Okay.
For Indian citizens mm-hmm. who are there to work or visit, but also for the locals or anybody who wants to go to school there. Mm-hmm.
And you came over at 15.
Yes.
So, and you came with your parents?
No, I came with my cousins.
Your cousins, okay.
Yeah, because I have aunts and uncles here.
Okay. And why did you come over here? What was the decision process? Or
My aunt and my mom decided.
Okay.
And I said, sure, it's an adventure. That's exactly what happened. It wasn't like, oh, I want to go to the U.S. or I want to do this, or it just happened.
And then you finished school at Northrop.
Yeah.
And then you went to?
Concordia University,
okay.
Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, MedCon, Wisconsin.
And you graduated with?
Occupational therapy.
Okay.
Degree.
And that's what you're doing now?
Yeah.
Okay, we may get into that a little bit later. Okay. But so you then, you came over after high school.
Yeah.
And so you graduated from high school.
Yes.
Now, I'm curious why you had a connection to Goshen or to Heston and then Goshen College.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like a pretty far
yeah.
away.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the connection. So my dad decided, because I started going to college back home,
right, mm-hmm.
for a couple of years, like civil okay. engineering, and that wasn't going to work out. I was getting sick too. Like, my health was not in the best shape right now. Right there at that time. So once I recovered, my dad was like, hey, let's find an opportunity for you in the US. So believe it or not, I applied to 128 colleges and universities, including Harvard, John Hopkins, Princeton, including MIT.
So which ones did you not apply for?
I don't even know. Here's what happened. Some friend of his say, hey, my kids were applying at the U.S. Like for U.S. universities, and I have a list of some universities, and then they gave it to me. So my job was to write a letter. Well, I wrote one. I typed one and then changed, you know,
sure, yeah.
to whom or whatever, and then send that to 128 based off of whatever was provided, mm-hmm. right? And then 2 months in or something, all this university sent me application packets.
Now you had to do that individually.
All of them look amazing, you know what I mean? All those pictures yeah. and kids, students playing and whatever. But then it came down to, okay, you know, which one is the easiest to get into? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them ask for application fee. Mm-hmm. You gotta pay $100, $200. You know, all of those. Yeah. And then the tuition.
Sure.
So you gotta compare and contrast which one is the easiest to get into. And then my dad had a friend. He told him, you know, conversation. They were having a conversation. He told him, hey, by the way, my daughter goes to Heston College. And it's a really good school, small school, and it's easier to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied there too. You know, I got the address, sent it over, and then the director of international students, Dave Osborne, he sent me the package. And looked at it, filled it up. I didn't have to pay $100, and I didn't have to. You know, you have to take like TOEFL, like the English
yeah, sure.
qualification, mm-hmm. whatever. I don't think I needed to take that either because there was an option of coming here and taking it here.
Okay.
As well.
So did you? So you can say that you chose Heston and turned down MIT. Is that right?
Well, I'm not sure if it was turning it down. If I had the option and the money, I would have gone to MIT.
Okay.
And I'm not even sure if I actually knew how big yeah. MIT was at that time.
Sure.
You know, I'm just looking at tuition, you know, application fee, which one is, you know, easier and cheaper.
Well, you know, you could still say that. You chose Heston over.
Right.
I mean, just to be fair, or Harvard, or whatever. You turned down all the Ivy League schools
exactly.
for Heston and then Goshen College.
Exactly.
And of course, the connection between Heston and Goshen is pretty, that's a pretty clear connection then.
Yes.
So after the 2 years there, you yeah. came to Goshen.
Yeah. And here's how it happened. Skip Barnett would be the international director mm-hmm. at Goshen College. He comes down there, he goes down there and recruits international students yeah. every so often. So one of those visits he had, I was the first international student he came across, right?
Okay.
And then he's like, okay, what year are you? Are you graduating? Are you interested in, you know, continuing your education? I'm like, you know what? I actually got accepted at a university in Oklahoma, Cameron University or something like that. And they gave me a really good deal as far as I can only, you know, they let me pay in-state tuition, which was affordable, like $1,000 a semester. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to work and then I'm going to pay and I can do it. And then when Skip Barnett talked to me about it, I was like, I would like to come, but you got to find me a scholarship. Because I have this deal, I want to bid it.
Yeah. I mean, you got to play the cards, right?
Yeah. It worked out. I knew about Goshen College. You know, they're sister colleges. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know I could go there. Yeah. Until, you know, he talked to me and then he was open about it. He's like, hey, call me. This is my number. Call me. If I don't pick up, it's because of the holidays. And I had 5 weeks between that conversation and the time I had to move, whether it's Oklahoma or Goshen.
Right? Yeah.
So he said, it's the holidays. You can bother me. It's okay. But I'll work on it. I'll work on scholarship for you. And then he did find me a scholarship. So I dished Oklahoma.
So you got the heat of Oklahoma came with the cold of Goshen.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's that too. Like, you don't think about the weather at that time.
Right, yeah.
You're like, better deal.
Sure, yeah. Well, there is that.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm kind of curious for you, coming from the U.S., I mean, here, I'm a U.S. perspective, right? Mm-hmm. How do we get Ethiopia, Africa wrong?
Africa wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, people here think Africa is a country.
Okay.
One of the things, it's a continent and it has 53, you know, there have been to a couple of new countries.
Yeah. So, and some of them have changed a little bit over here. Yeah. So
countries there, and most people, especially when I came, people thought everybody was hungry, drought, poor, war. And I had to explain that the country is three times the size of Texas, and where the drought was, where the hunger was, where the war was. So those are the things, because what they watch on the news, that's all they know, unless you are a history person and you like reading history. So that's what the first thing when I came. But now, because of social media, people's perspective has changed because they have so much exposure. They can see and read and research and have everything on their phone. So right now, it's totally different from when I came. Mm-hmm. Then I have to tell them that, you know, people are asking me if we live in huts or if I see the lions and tigers.
Yeah.
No, I don't. So things like that. But now people, you know, there's all the social media available. So now I think they're okay. But they still think that people from that part of the world do not know anything about anything. That's just an assumption. Mm-hmm. Because when you are a poor country, people assume that you don't read. I don't know what they're thinking. You know, we can read and see what's going on. So that's the only thing.
Do you have ice cream?
Have ice cream in the cities.
I don't know
if the regular farmer would have it, but that's a European influence, you know?
Sure, yeah. How about you? What was your perspective on what we got wrong in our perspective of Ethiopia?
That's a really loaded question. But going back to what she was saying, when I was at Houston College, a lot of kids, you know, 16, 17-year-olds, they thought we actually lived with animals, like those wild animals.
Oh, okay.
Like tigers and, you know, the lions and giraffe and all of those. They really thought we kind of lived with them, like in the forest or something like that.
Yeah.
And one of our friends, he played along with, you know, with a bunch of the students, and he used to tell them, hey, by the way, you know, in my house, we had two tigers and, you know, an elephant. And you know, those kids were like, are you serious? Wow. It's, you know, he was just playing.
Sure, yeah.
Just teasing them.
That would actually be quite fun.
Yeah. And we're like, dude, you're lying. He also would tell him, hey, he would be like, I'm 17 years old when I was young. In Ethiopia, you know, we get married really young. So when I was young, at 12, 13, I had two wives. He's just making stories up. But that's not true. None of that is true. He's just playing along.
I mean, there are people who live in huts.
Yeah.
Not everybody lives in, you know, depending where you live.
Yeah.
But the animals, no.
Tigers on land, they'll eat you, your food.
They're not pets, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
There is poverty.
Sure.
Poverty rate compared to the Western countries. Mm-hmm. In Ethiopia, you know, a lot of the African nations, there's a lot of deep, deep poverty, you know. I was privileged and blessed to grow up in a household where my dad was a businessman, and from a young age he was doing business. Mm-hmm. So he was able to escape that kind of lifestyle and make something of himself. So I grew up in a well-to-do family, which on the other side, you know, a lot of his relatives were suffering from poverty. So I see poverty. I saw poverty growing up, you know, and then helping each other out is a common thing. Like, you know, if there's a family member that is doing well, it means he's supposed to help the others financially and get there for them when there's a time of need. If you have a car, you know, your auntie is due, you got to jump. There's no 911.
Yeah.
You got to get in the car and then get them something. Mm-hmm. So all of that, like, if you have a better privilege and opportunity, you're supposed to help out the rest of your family, friends, neighbors, and things like that.
It's not just enable them to stay poor, but you help them to as a stepping stone so they can open their own business or they can move better. And a lot of them, you see the difference, like generation-wise. But their parents were in that position. Their kids are in school, finished university because families are helping each other out. And the next generation does the same thing just to get out of that
poverty.
And then, of course, there are those in poverty that don't have that that person or that family member that would help them along. And so then that just is a, sort of a self-perpetuating poverty. So let me reverse it. What did you get wrong about the United States before you came over?
The way.
That's a loaded question too. While I'm thinking about it though, are you ready?
Okay.
While I'm thinking about it, can I start with what shocked me?
Sure, yeah. Well, and that would be probably a good indication what you got wrong.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I mean. So what shook me right when I got to the airport, so I had to like stop in three airports, right? So my first stop was Newark. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
There's that. See, I still can't say it. And then I stopped at Kansas City and then Wichita.
Right.
The first one, you know, there was a long wait until my next flight. So I'm sitting there watching people, you know, go around, walk around, whatever. You know what happens at the airport? People are going in, going out.
Would this have been the first time you flew?
Ever.
And then you left the country?
Yeah, ever.
To New York City.
Yeah.
New York City.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, different people. I'm absorbing everything I can. You know what I mean? Like, it's a new country.
And you were alone.
And I was alone.
At eight?
No, I was older, actually. 22.
22, okay.
Yeah. So I'm absorbing everything I can, and then I'm sitting there. There's about 4 hours transit time, right? And then there's this young couple, I guess couple, right? So there's this young man saying bye to his girlfriend / wife, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're right there kissing for a long time in public. Now, you can tell there's a culture of shock there because you never see people kissing in public in Ethiopia.
Much less a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Much less a long time. Exactly. Yeah. They're there, you know. I mean, I'm like, I saw things like this in the movies, but I never knew people actually do it, a kiss in public for a long time. And then I'm staring at them, and then I'm looking around. Nobody's there. Nobody's looking. I'm the only one looking. I'm like, there's something wrong.
there's something wrong with them or you, and you weren't sure at that point.
Seriously. Yeah. Them or me or whatever. I'm like, I was shocked. Like, it's a real picture of culture shock.
Yeah.
Then, you know, from that point on, you know, that lasted a while, and then she got in, you know, when the plane was ready.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, what's next? But there's a lot of freedom. Like, you know, people are very free. Like, it's a freer environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I started college, right? Another shock right here. I started college, went to Heston College. And then in class, the girls, 16-year-olds, in class, they were very active. They talk, they ask questions, they answer questions. The boldness, the courage. And then they are actually the majority of the interaction and the conversation come from the women, the ladies, the girls in class. The guys do answer questions or ask questions, but the majority is women.
Hmm.
I'm like, this is totally different because, again, culture shock. Mm-hmm. In Ethiopia, not a whole lot of girls or women do talk and challenge others like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then, you know, the way they sit too. In Ethiopia, you have to have like this proper, you know, you're a lady, so you gotta be like properly sitting and all that good stuff. The girls in class, they have their feet on the table, like totally free, you know what I mean? So it was a culture shock initially for me.
Did you think, I made a mistake, I should go back home?
I did not think that. Somebody told me, hey, once you cross the bridge.
You burn the bridge?
Burn the bridge.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, don't look back. As in, like, not to go back.
Yeah.
But be focused.
Yeah.
Accomplish the goal, the mission, the dreams you have.
Yeah.
Kind of. Somebody told me that. So as soon as I landed here, I'm like, okay, I got to learn the culture. I got to learn the lifestyle. I was focused on adjusting myself.
Mm-hmm. So what about you? What did you get wrong about?
I think the weather more than anything else. Because I was exposed, I read a lot. I read like Newsweek, I read about Time magazine. At that time, those were the ones that my uncle was a pilot, so he would get it.
Okay.
I would take it from him and read it. So I had an exposure. And I love to read, so I read everything under the sun, whatever I can get. So I kind of knew about the culture, but the weather, like the humidity.
Hmm.
As soon as we got out of the airplane, because what they did was, it was an international flight, so a bus came, took you to the airport from the airplane. So as soon as I got out and stood on the stairs, I felt like I couldn't breathe.
What month was this?
It was in the summer. October.
October. Okay.
Yeah, it was really weird.
And this would have been Fort Wayne.
No, this was in Chicago.
Chicago, here. Okay, yeah.
You know, there was no red light.
Yeah.
So I was like, I thought I couldn't breathe. I thought I was losing my life.
Yeah.
And also the accent, because I thought I spoke good English, but my English was more European, French, Indian, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not understand what people were saying. It was really, yeah, because they were speaking fast. I mean, I caught on quickly, but the English was another thing. I'm like, oh, it's different when you're watching a movie because it's not teenagers talking
right, yeah.
fast.
Yeah. And they're not using as much slang as you would on the street or whatever.
Yes.
So where did you learn English?
School.
And your Indian first language was?
Amharic.
Amharic,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I spoke French. I went to a French school when I was younger. So I spoke French first. And then Indian National, they taught in English. And then I went to Ethiopia Public School, which was in English and Amharic, our language. So
you have three languages?
Three. I used to speak fluently the French, but I don't.
Yeah, okay.
I knew two.
Well, you know what they say, deal what you call someone who speaks three languages, you call them trilingual.
Oh,
two languages, bilingual.
Yeah.
One language is called American.
Oh, my God.
And so, there's only English?
Yeah. So I'm always fascinated with, you know, other countries
yeah.
that we perceive as being underdeveloped country and living in huts and those kinds of things, and yet you speak 3.5 languages.
Yeah.
And we barely speak our own sometimes. And so it's fascinating that way. What did you speak?
Kind of same.
Okay.
Because English is given as a subject in classrooms from like when you were young. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, you know, grow up learning it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, the main source of our English at the time was school.
Yeah. But you would both have been fluent in English by the time you came over.
I could communicate when I came.
Yeah.
But same scenario, like her, you know, the perspective I had, you know, with my capacity to speak English, and then when I actually got into the ocean of, you know, Americans talking, I couldn't understand some of it because they were like going really, really fast. When I'm sitting with somebody, you know, like have this kind of conversation, it was more understandable because especially the guys talk a little slower. The girls are extremely fast. So it was really hard to get it in your head. You gotta think fast.
Yeah. You have to sort the stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This big transition, it has to happen.
Yeah. I mean,
it takes time, but it happens. Mm-hmm. And then you adjust.
So how long have you been here? How many years have you? I'm not trying to find how old you are.
35
years.
And
you've been here
24.
Yes. Okay, so you've been here a generation.
Yes.
I mean, pretty much. When you look at it that way. So does it feel like home?
Yes,
it does.
Yeah. It is home
now. It does.
Yeah.
You know, you think you eat what's here. You think about, you know, like you could call us native Hoosiers. we support every sport team that Indiana has.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Today I was at work and I was trying to watch Indiana Fever basketball.
Caitlin Clark.
You know, she plays for Indiana.
By the way, we're going to go watch the Fever on Friday night.
You are?
Yeah.
Wow.
My sister-in-law and her husband live in close to Indianapolis, about 20 minutes from there. So we're going to go down and spend the weekend. And
there you go.
Taking a game, so anyways.
Make sure they win because they lost today. To Washington.
Yeah, she told me, a friend of mine who works with me told me that her son went to watch it today because he got free ticket.
Yeah.
And she told me at 12 o'clock. I'm like, 12 o'clock. He's obsessed. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure I have no influence on whether they win or lose.
Yeah. So I know. Yeah.
Just to clarify that.
I know. I want them to win. So.
Sure. Yeah. 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 So in your life, what's the greatest accomplishment, you know, looking back at your life, the thing that you're the proudest of that you accomplished?
I guess getting married, having kids, family. That's the number one. Number two is being an occupational therapist.
And you have children?
Yeah, I have three boys.
Three boys, okay. And their ages are?
16, 13, and 10.
Okay.
The 13 and 11 are going to be 14. No, the 13 and 10 are going to be 14 and 11 in August. So
okay. And for you?
I'll say the same. I don't think anything else would match the value of family.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest accomplishment, blessing, for my life would be her and, you know, my three kids.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the rest of it, you know, career and all of that, you know, we went to college, got degrees, got the skills we needed, and we're using them. I'm using my skills too. I did computer science, and I'm in that line of job right now, and I'm blessed, and I thank God for it.
Yeah.
Nothing beats family.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can look at what we call accomplishments, and you can trade those off anytime.
Yeah.
And say, well, I could have accomplished this over here and been just as proud.
Right.
But when you look at family,
yeah,
obviously that's a whole different level of
yeah.
of value and importance.
Yes, agree.
So if you had to look back at your to the person that you were, knowing who you are now, if you could give a piece of advice to the person you were when you left Ethiopia, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
So I personally grew up in a, I don't know if you call it conservative, but you know, my parents taught us the Bible, which I'm eternally grateful for. I came to know the Lord through that, right? Mm. So church was the main thing, like I mentioned earlier, in life. The majority of time would be spent in church, and I wouldn't change anything about it. So all of that, when I came here, you know, my mind and my focus is, you know, a lot on the spiritual side of things. And I didn't do much for fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that, you know, about 4 or 5 years later, you know, after I came here, I look back and I said, you know, I do all these things, and there's, you know, a spiritual side of things. There's, you know, my college and study and all of that. But I don't do anything for fun. So I started looking into directions, you know, for me to have a little fun. And I came up with, hey, what can I do while I'm in college, right? So I took a swimming lesson.
Mm-hmm.
In a little start,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. It might be a big start.
You know, how about that? So I got into swimming, and then there was this lady at Goshen College, older lady, that taught me how to do it. She had a hard time teaching me, not because she couldn't, but because I was... I was afraid of the water.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were able to finish the course, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at IUSB, I took a gym class, like lifting the weights,
mm-hmm.
and all that good stuff. That kind of took my head off of the seriousness of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the ritual, the routine, thinking of school, this and that. And then I got into a basketball class.
Okay.
So, you know, you look at, you know, Michael Jordan, and, you know, like I was watching movies and things like that. And I'm like, you know, this is fun. I played soccer, so let's try basketball. So I registered in my mind. What I was thinking was, the class is, you know, somebody's going to come and then show you how to do everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how you dribble the ball, this is how you shoot, this is how you hold the ball, whatever. That's what my expectation was. That the class was, you get together, you go in the gym, on the court, you get together, you have your what do you call it, captains or team captains, whatever. They select their team, and then the class is just playing the game. Playing basketball.
And you knew nothing about it.
Zero. Nothing. So, you know, as soon as, you know, the teacher said, start, go ahead, and whatever, I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I walked out. I was confused.
Yeah.
And most of everybody knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of them actually were really good. I didn't even know why they were taking the class.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he stopped the game. He was like, why are you out? I'm like, I don't know what to do. So he gave me like a quick,
mm-hmm.
okay, you know, run to the rim. If they pass you the ball, just, you know, throw it in. You know, if you can't throw it in, pass it to your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Like a quick, like, mm-hmm. tutorial, right?
Yeah.
He gave me that, and then I survived.
So your advice would be, have some fun in life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is good. I mean, for, you know, I think some of us have grew up with a lot of fun.
Right.
And we probably needed to learn a little more seriousness.
Right.
For you, you had a lot of seriousness.
Yes.
And needed to learn some fun.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
But what about you?
Me, there are so many opportunities here, but you're all, I feel like I could have, like, take more, what do you call it? Take steps to do things that I dreamed of doing.
Mm.
You know, go out there and do it, mm. and not hold yourself back. Things like that. That's why, because it's all out here, and choose and do it.
Yeah.
So that's what I would advise myself.
She wanted to be a traveling, what is it? A traveling newsreader reporter or something?
No. Camera. camera person.
Might have been that. There are so many things I wanted to do that it was easily accessible, and I still didn't do it. But I'm going to. I'm trying now.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
Never too old or never too late to try to try to do something different.
Yeah.
Well, you both seem fairly curious about life and different and new things, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Do you make Ethiopian food in your home? Do you cook
once
Ethiopian?
In a while.
Yeah.
All of our friends make it, especially the injera. My friend, they just moved to Ohio. She was selling it, so I stopped making it and buying it from her. Now she moved, I have to start making it again. The sauces are easy to make. The injera part is the one's like tricky, you know. Has to be.
You know what? We
yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
You're a pro.
I know that it looks easy. It looks as easy for me to use injera bread as it did for you to play basketball.
And
I'll walk out of the out of the class because I can't do this. Do your kids introduced to Ethiopian culture, food, language?
Language. Our oldest listens. Yeah. He understands everything. Mm-hmm. There's no secret in front of him because we'll be talking in American and English. He'll be like, "So what's going on? So what happened?" So it's...
you weren't supposed to know.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Our middle, when he was younger, he used to understand too. But along the way, it went away. And my youngest doesn't know much, but he catches on quickly. Yeah. So last year we were in Ethiopia to visit the grandparents, great grandparents. So he caught on quickly, remember? He was speaking it and communicating. So actually, some of us were talking. We're like, why don't we teach our kids when they're younger? Because once they're in school, they speak English and then they come home. Yeah. So they want to learn, so we're planning to teach them. There is a website, I think, actually. That's what I said.
Duolingo or something?
Yes.
Do you speak, what language do you speak to each other? Now you speak
at
three.
At home?
At home. Now you speak three languages. You could choose a language that your kids don't understand, maybe.
Well,
and go for that one.
That's the thing. You know, we should have been really serious about speaking in our national language, like seriously at home. We should have done that. Yeah. We did. So we use English a lot.
You use English a lot. I have answered in Amharic. Even though I've been longer here than him, he tends to gravitate towards English, and I answer in Amharic.
Yeah, part of the reason...
Then we tell each other, let's try to speak Amharic without putting one word of English. It's hard.
I mean, if you already built your habit of speaking one language, it's pretty hard to say, now tomorrow we're just going to start with the other one, because... you have to change the way you think, and your relationship is built on your language, and now you have to change your relationship in some ways because of another language. So you just
to build like a different habit.
But we talk in Amharic.
We do.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why she mentioned we went to Ethiopia last summer, one of the main reasons why we went to Ethiopia with the kids is because, you know, our oldest is 16, like 13 and 10. And they have never went back to see their heritage.
So this was the first time?
Their first time.
So we really planned on it so they know, they could catch up with, you know, the culture and the people. And I remember, you know, we got there and our kids, they froze at the airport. Literally froze. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of people that look like their mommy and dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, like, the number of people at the airport,
the
population is like at a higher, you know, you go to the fair,
that's
at a busy moment, just imagine, at the airport, fair amount of people, they're right there.
Yeah.
And they're like, what's going on?
So that's what they got wrong about Africa.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a lot of learning curve for them, you know, man. 3 weeks in... I mean, it was kind of like drinking from a hose for them.
Yeah.
You know, got a lot out of it. They enjoyed it.
Sure.
They enjoyed it.
Especially,
you know, like spending time with grandma,
grandpa.
Sure.
These great-grandma, cousins, and everybody. Ethiopia is a very affectionate culture.
Mm-hmm.
So every relative that they see, they kiss them, you know,
on the cheek.
On the cheek, and there's a tight hug. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So they adapted to that. That affection. Oh, yeah. That's cool. Do they know that you didn't live in mud huts with lions and tigers?
They knew that.
Yeah. Although I would say, you know, if we did, in the lions were, you know, in the house, whatever. They think they would be having much more fun.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have to try that next time.
Right.
So you're Goshen people. Right. What would you dream for Goshen? What would your dream be for your community?
Wow. You want to go?
You went to Goshen College from Broy.
So Goshen, first of all, I love Goshen. Mm-hmm. And I love the people around here because you could feel the family connection, the community connection. Anywhere you go, you go to church or you come to the brew, you know, to find people. Work, you know, now I work at New Pierce, and then you feel that connection, mm-hmm. you know. So I really love that. Maybe, I don't know, that built on that. Personally, as a family, I want to keep building on that, but targeting, like, impact, mm-hmm. influence, like, because people need to be loved. People need to be seen, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes, you know, just being around people doesn't mean that people are actually living full life. Mm-hmm. But whatever I can do or we can do to make that happen for anybody, that's how my goal in life, mm-hmm. bringing impact and influence.
Yeah.
And it starts to one.
Yeah. How about you?
Just continue. I love the people. People are very kind, genuine, mm-hmm. honest. You don't see any fakeness. I like that about them. But I wanted to build on, how do you say? At the same time, people are reserved. Mm. I wanted to be relaxed some more, you know, saying hi, how are you doing? But you can see the genuine face on their face. They're not, you know, pretending, which I like. So just build up on that. And the community service is running. I don't know. I think it's a good place. I'm having a hard time coming up the thing to trying to think. Yeah, that's a good place.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
good place.
The other thing I notice.
He's more very, yeah, people's versus.
The other thing I notice, which we all know, is the lifestyle is really hectic and busy,
mm-hmm.
In the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you see it everywhere too.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I see families, everybody under the pressure of life, mm-hmm. stressed out. You know, you could see that, mm-hmm. anywhere you go. And then my, what's the word? I feel deep within me that there's more to life than being under pressure constantly, you know what I mean? And then with being in pressure and under stress, you're missing out. You're missing mm-hmm. out being in a call, being at rest, and then having a deep connection, you know, with God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the lifestyle is hectic and busy, and then the community is going that route, has been going that route. It's a lifestyle, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I think we're missing out. Yeah. You're missing out being called and collected and have a genuine, unrushed
mm-hmm.
Communication and connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think that's why, if I quote a scripture, that's why God took out the Israelites. One of the reasons why he took them out from Egypt is because they're too hectic, busy, and Pharaoh was working them hard. And then God said, I'm going to take you up, and when you get to the wilderness, you will worship me.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't do that while they were in Egypt because they were under stress, mm-hmm. tremendous stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had to let them out so they could have that clear mm-hmm. connection with God.
And
they'll be worshiping.
Yeah.
So I feel for that.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to stop the treadmill once you're on it.
Right.
And, exactly. And you know, once you get that thing rolling, it's pretty hard to jump off.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. We miss a lot in life because we're under that stress. We're that busy. Well, anything else you want to tell us before we close this off?
Well, thank you for... Did you have something?
No, I don't find it funny. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for, you know, calling us in. Since we've known you for a long time, and we do appreciate what you're doing, what you've been doing, and what you're doing as your, you know, as your family has been a blessing, not only to us, to the community. You know, I mean, everybody knows the group.
Yeah.
Everybody.
And even people from out of town. Yeah. You went to Syracuse, I remember, to this someone about, this is what it was before 2020, like 2018. They are from Chicago, vacationing in Syracuse.
Okay.
And they said they heard about the brew, so they came to
Syracuse. Interesting. So we're known in Chicago too, then, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would be. Some of our friends come from, you know, out of town, and we bring them. Yeah. Bring us here. They love it. My parents, I brought them here.
Okay.
They came to visit. Just because it's not just a coffee shop. It's also a place of community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So I enjoy it. Everybody enjoys it.
Good.
Thank you for the wonderful work.
Well, I didn't pay you to say that. Just to make clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for spending this time with us. And I've known you for a number of years, a few years actually, but never really known you.
Yeah.
Sit down and talk. And so it's always kind of good to hear a story, to hear your story. And it's just been really a lot of fun for me to get to know you in a different way. Yeah. So thanks again, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
We had a conversation. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Continue to be reminded that everyone has a story that needs to be told. Take a moment today to listen to someone's story and tell yours as well. Be well, and make your world just a bit better today.